Hello, it's Tuesday 11th of May. I'm Hannah Pearson from Per Anderson. On today's show, Gary Bowerman of Check In Asia and I are excited to welcome Kerry Newsom, Australian manager ITS Vietnam and host of podcast What About Vietnam to the show. So let's get started.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. Well, Vietnam can be considered one of the few success stories in Southeast Asia in terms of tourism over the past year, particularly domestically, during this pandemic, and has managed the COVID-19 outbreak pretty well. Even though it is currently experiencing another surge in cases, we are hopeful that these will be handled in the same efficient way as the past outbreaks across the last year and a half. So we're pleased to be chatting today with Kerry Newsom, who's Australia's manager of ITS Vietnam, and host of the podcast, What About Vietnam? And all-round expert on all things travel in Vietnam. Kerry, thanks very much for coming on the show. How are you doing and where are you today?
Gary, I'm delighted to be here. I'm sitting here in sunny Sydney, Australia at the moment. And we're going to be talking about one of my favorite subjects, Vietnam.
It's one of our favorite subjects too. So there's plenty to talk about. We've got plenty of questions lined up for you, Kerry. So we hope you're ready. So let's begin. Begin with your background. You have a strong background in marketing and account management. You've worked for big travel names like FCM Travel. So what was it about the travel sector that sort of attracted you as a career?
Look, I think FCM, as part of the Flight Centre Group, the corporate arm, and later on TravelX, working for those two companies, they really fueled my love of travel. I have this perception that I think if you can combine a career with something you love, then you've really hit the jackpot. And I think travel is a learning experience. It's an industry which is, you know, eternally evolving. So it kind of hit both buttons for me. And a great foundation for what I'm doing now. And as much as I've tried to leave it a couple of times, I've always been drawn back to travel and to the industry. So very easy decision to make, really.
And the past year hasn't changed your mind?
Well, it's an interesting question to say change my mind. I think I've probably become more vigilant about travel and more keen to keep travel as something in people's minds that is still a good thing to do. There's been so much negativity around travel and so much speculation and, you know, people becoming nervous about travel that, you know, if I can do that through the podcast and keeping, you know, Vietnam on the radar and keeping people inspired to travel, because there's still so much to gain from travel. It's not just about travel and it's not just about tourism. Travel offers people, I think, so much more.
Absolutely. So you specialize in Vietnam, but obviously you said you're in Sydney, so you're based in Australia. How did your love for selling Vietnam come about?
A long time ago, I read a book called The Girl in the Picture by Denise Chong. Now, I don't know whether you ever saw that really iconic picture of the girl running away from a napalm village attack. The book actually goes into the story of her life beyond that event. And that kindled my first interest. I visited first back in 2007 and I was just gobsmacked at just how beautiful the country was, how beautiful the people were and welcoming, the food, there was just so much. So I was determined that I would go back. So between 2007 and 2016, I did lots of trips and I fell more and more in love. But it wasn't until 2016, when I was looking for a career change, that I met a guy named John La, who headed up the Little Hoi An Hotel Group in Hoi An. And he was building these beautiful, and I mean beautiful, 4.5-star boutique hotels in Hoi An. And he wanted a foothold in Australia and wanted to reach the Australian market. So I was really in the right place at the right time. And he offered me the job to head up the Australia market for that. So I did. And because of my background in Flight Centre and with my contacts in the industry, I was able to win what they call preferred supplier status, with the Flight Centre Group. So that was a bit of a coup. And then beyond that, I went on to get the job with ITS Vietnam. So then that opened up the rest of Vietnam to me. So, you know, where I'd been just really focused on Hoi An, I got to explore all the other parts of Vietnam and sell those into the Australian market. And I really felt at the time that Vietnam was really going to give the Australian Bali market a run for its money. And I really felt it was just timely that I happened to be in the right place at the right time. And while the podcast I'm doing at the moment is a bit of a side gig, it is something I love doing, but, you know, and I'm not really selling in that. I'm just really doing that for inspiration. So, yeah, it took a long time to answer that question, but, you know, it's kind of coming from some deep roots there.
That's a great backstory. We'll talk more and more about Vietnam as we go through, but you've escorted several tours to Vietnam, and you were actually there just before the Australian borders closed in March last year. So tell us more about that.
Well, I've got to make an admission on that. I was there during this. I had arrived into Vietnam on the 29th of February, and I wasn't due to come back until the 29th of March. So I normally stay about 4 to 5 weeks. And really from the get-go, I was in a state of denial, I have to admit it. I really couldn't believe that in my lifetime I was going to live through a pandemic. And very quickly in those first couple of weeks, you know, into March, and probably about the 15th of March, I was getting phone calls from home. You know, my husband was saying, you know, you really need to come home. This is kind of getting serious. In Vietnam itself, people were stepping up. There was more news broadcasts. I could see more military presence around. There was more COVID testing. The Vietnamese were definitely wearing masks and not looking at us foreigners very favorably if we weren't. You know, menus at restaurants were getting shortened because, you know, people weren't able to get their stocks in. Staff, et cetera, were being advised to take leave to go home. So it was happening almost daily and hourly. And then if I could just take you to what was happening then back for all my travel agents and, you know, the flights that were still leaving Australia and landing into Vietnam. So ITS Vietnam was greeting all these people, you know, in Hanoi or Ho Chi Minh City, 15, 20, 30 people at a time. But then out of concern and duty of care was having to literally turn them around again. So there was great anxiety and there was, you know, some travelers weren't happy about this. They were going, oh, like nonsense, you know, this, you know, we're here for a holiday. We've got travel insurance and we're going to be fine. And, you know, they were really pushing back on it. I mean, it was stressful. And I'm happy to report we got everyone back and it was really well managed, and it had to be well managed because, you know, our relationships with these companies, you know, we wanted to ensure that they knew that we could, you know, mitigate the risk at the time. I didn't leave till about the 19th, or not about the 19th of March. And, you know, testing was really, I think I got tested 3 times just on the way to the airport when I was flying out. And because I arrived back into Australia, and the biggest thing here was, you know, if you had enough toilet paper. I got handed a piece of paper at the airport which insisted that I sign it under my own volition to do 14 days self-isolation, and that was it. So, you know, I'm happy to report that Australia did finally get it and stepped up, and, you know, we're now reaping the benefits of that. But can you see it was chalk and cheese from me in Vietnam and then coming back to Australia at that time. It was crazy. It was really crazy. I'm glad I was there, by the way. I don't think I'd believed it. I would have believed it otherwise had I not seen it firsthand.
Yeah, I think you make a good point that, you know, in Asia, in Southeast Asia as well, we really kind of experienced that pandemic first and the fear of it first. And I think a lot of people, you know, when Gary and I are both from the UK, and when we look at how the UK responded with a really, really slow response to it, you know, we look back now and say, why didn't they pick up on what Asia was going through? But it was like that, wasn't it? Just the people who were hit first were the most impacted. Everyone else said, no, nothing to worry about. It's just some virus in Asia. Little did we know.
Yeah, I had a lot of people that were in denial along with me, I think. We just couldn't believe it.
Right. Yeah, I still can't believe it, 16 months on.
Me either. I don't want to.
No. So what's the current travel situation in Vietnam right now, Kerry? It looks like they're going through another wave of cases.
Yeah, I think we're up to the fourth wave, which kind of began in the public holidays around the 1st of May. And more recently, just over the weekend, there's been one death recorded due to actually the AstraZeneca vaccine. So, you know, tough that has been recorded, but Vietnam is still holding strong to their vaccine rollout. Look, there was some transmissions that were discovered post 14 days quarantine, so they've extended it to 21 days now. I mean, everyone I'm talking to in Vietnam is very much aware of it. Ho Chi Minh City in particular, they're doing on-the-spot fines if people are not complying. I mean, Vietnam just doesn't want to take any chances. They really don't. And, you know, because of the density of the population, they just can't afford for COVID to get a foothold. And I don't know whether it's come up with you, Hannah or Gary, you know, Vietnam has a population which are very fearful of illness, even above financial hardship or any other things. Their fear of getting sick is really quite high. And I didn't really get that. But I certainly did back in March, and I was told that was something that was really strong. So I think that's what spurred Vietnam on and the government to act so decisively.
Let's go back to pre-COVID, Kerry. You made a really interesting comment a few moments ago where you said you were hoping that Vietnam could kind of supplant or at least complement Bali for the Australian market. So pre-pandemic, you know, what destinations in Vietnam were becoming popular with Australian tourists, and what kind of trends were developing at that time?
Look, Vietnam was hot. It was really becoming the destination for discovery for Australian tourists, because, you know, if you've been in Australia, you know, you've kind of done Bali. You know, everybody had and it was getting a little bit tired. So with a flight to Ho Chi Minh City or Hanoi, you know, round about the 8 hours, and direct flights coming more available, certainly opened up the market. But iconically wise, I think there was still the main cities like Hanoi, Halong Bay, the UNESCO World Heritage Bay, Hue, the imperial city, Hoi An, you know, a 16th century old town, Nha Trang, Sapa. I mean, they were definitely still up there on the radar as the key destinations, because still Vietnam to the average Australian has still got lots of myths and perceptions about, you know, has it evolved since the Vietnam War? Trend-wise, Gary, I think I was starting to see experiences start to take hold, and, you know, people were looking for experiences in Vietnam and then a destination to match them to. So if you wanted to, you know, if you were into trekking, or you wanted to do caving, or you wanted water sports or a river cruise, or you wanted to get into culture or food and you wanted to do sort of and explore the cuisines, etc., and the different flavors in the different regions. I think that's what I started to see, because I kept looking to find those experiences to make the tours that I was selling richer for those experiences in those destinations. So, yeah, definitely, you know, like the Phong Nha Caves, you know, the Son Dung Cave that opened up in 2014. See, these caves have only recently been discovered. I've heard that the Son Dung Cave in Phong Nha, you could fit Big Ben in it. Like, it takes 4 days to go through. So, you know, that just that wow factor, I think, really spawned interest. And, you know, we were into over-tourism almost in Vietnam, and a lot of those visitors were coming from Australia.
And in terms of the visitors that were coming from Australia, I mean, were they across the age groups, demographics? Was it driven by the big cities like Sydney and Melbourne? You know, who was going?
Good question. From my experience, it was a bit of a mixed bag. A lot of baby boomers, a lot of, you know, you kind of mature, what I would call your mature traveler, because, you know, I kind of fit in that category. Yeah, but then there was the, I wouldn't say it attracted at that point the real hardcore backpacker. There was definitely the digital nomad that was starting to trend in Vietnam. But, you know, there was some aspect of it growing into the younger market. But it was, you know, families felt very comfortable traveling there, and certainly a bit more of a mature market, I think, was enjoying it and discovering Vietnam from, you know, beyond what we knew about it as Vietnam the war.
So, Kerry, I'm going to ask you the million-dollar question. And, I mean, you've said earlier that Vietnam is taking quite a cautious approach. How do you think international travel is going to restart in Vietnam in general?
Yeah, well, of course, you know, this is the discussion and the question on everyone's lips, isn't it? Look, I think it will begin with its closest neighbours, being China, Japan, Taiwan and South Korea. I think, you know, previous to the pandemic, these markets accounted for about 80% of Vietnam's foreign tourism. So if you were Vietnam, I think, you know, you would be definitely looking for those countries to come back first, as they will bring the swiftest recovery. I think Vietnam will view countries with, you know, low case. I mean, you know, they're talking about zero case. I think that's a little bit of a hard yard, but certainly low case countries, Australia fits in that. Singapore may get a look in, as we have similar case rates. So I think the closest neighbours will be the guinea pigs, I guess, and then we'll go from there.
And another difficult question to ask, because we read a lot about Australia and the comments from your leaders about, you know, the borders may be closed through 2022. We don't quite know yet. So two parts to that. What is the general feeling among Australians about traveling overseas again? Is there real strong pent-up demand? And from that pent-up demand, do you think that destinations like Vietnam would really fall into the category of places that Australians would like to go to as their first overseas trip for 2 years or whatever?
Great question, Gary. Thanks for throwing that one at me. Around a dinner table type conversation, people that I'm talking to in the industry, it's a real mixed bag. I think it depends on the audience that I'm talking to. There's some real conservative Australians that are saying, no, we're not going anywhere until this and this and this happens. And then there's some diehards, some people, and I'm going to put myself in the diehard. And, you know, where I'm itching to travel, I've traveled extensively in Australia and I love my country. But I've been, you know, I like discovering countries with interesting cultures. So, you know, I'm watching the world map and definitely wanting to discover beyond Australia. You're right, the media is playing a very big role in influencing people. And Vietnam is definitely up there. And that's what I love what you guys do, is that, you know, your reporting is giving some accuracy and some facts rather than just general musings by the media and sensationalism around, you know, where are the destinations to look at, to visit. So, you know, Vietnam has done a stellar job and I'm hoping it is going to feature up there. But at the moment, everyone is, you know, they're buying caravans. You can't buy a caravan for love nor money here, because, you know, people, you know, this is a big country to explore. You know, people are really getting into the local regions. But I think once confidence starts to build, I mean, one of the reasons I do the podcast is to try and re-engineer in people's brains so that, you know, those brains aren't left scarred with, oh, travel's a really cautious thing to do. I mean, we've been traveling the world with such freedom for so much time, I would hate to think that, you know, we're ruined for life, that we won't be able to step out our countries with confidence and explore new cultures. So it's a really mixed bag.
So what do you think is going to change once travel does resume between Vietnam and Australia? You know, the trends that we saw pre-pandemic going to continue, or are we going to see Australians going for something completely different?
Look, I think there's a couple of predetermined things that need to get sorted yet. I think the vaccine passport is definitely something, and, you know, I've listened to your podcast with, you know, experts about this. I think there's some fundamentals that still need to get answered to enable tourism to come back into Vietnam from Australia. I mean, Vietnam has got to accept a vaccine passport. What that's going to look like, what is it going to require from a tourist entering the country? I think that needs to get sorted. I think the visa situation, I'm watching very eagerly what's going to happen on visa eligibility. Now, you know, you're sitting in KL. I'm not sure what, you know, your visa is required to get into Vietnam. But I know if you were sitting in the UK, you could enter Vietnam pre the pandemic without a visa. But in Australia, you still needed a visa. And it took them until 2017 before they even brought on the e-visa, which made it very easy. But is Vietnam going to ramp up the eligibility status with the visa moving forward? I mean, that's something that I'm keen to watch as far as any changes coming through. And then there's the course of or the subject around the quarantining and travel insurance, that disruptor that, or that possibility that you could land in Vietnam and find yourself being put in 21 days quarantine. Now, there's a cost that comes with that. Who's going to bear that cost? Do you as a traveler need to be able to verify that you have travel insurance that's going to cover you for that, so that you're not going to be a burden on the Vietnam government? So I think there's just still so many changes and variables that still have to get sorted before, you know, we can honestly say, you know, hand on heart, that, you know, it's all good to go. Because it's not, as you, and I've heard you guys say, it's not just about, oh, now we've got a vaccine and everybody's vaccinated. There's a big, long paper trail to follow that. I mean, I'm sure there's underwriters in travel insurance companies at the moment frenetic at trying to put policies together that A, is going to be affordable for people, but B, is going to cover people for the pandemic moving on.
Yeah, that's an absolutely brilliant answer. And as you said, all of those elements that you talked about there, digital health passports, visas, insurance, they all overlap, and they're all going to be things that have to get ironed out in an integrated way over the coming months for countries to reopen. So tell us a little bit more about the company that you work for, ITS Vietnam. How has that adapted over the pandemic?
I don't think anybody in the travel industry missed the bullet with the pandemic. ITS Vietnam is a company that's been going 25 years. It's a Vietnam DMC. For your listeners, that means we specialize in ground operational services, and we work with travel agents, so we're a B2B company. We've had to re-engineer our business. We had to take our strengths and we had to refocus them also on the domestic market, where prior we really had a focus on the international market. We turned our attention, I think, largely to those niche sectors like golf, expat corporates, and the MICE travel sector. And another factor we really stepped up, and I'm really happy about this, is that we not only looked at repackaging our products and our tours and itineraries, but we tried to, and I think done a good job of putting in place risk-free options of purchase. I mean, I think if there's two tours and they're, you know, kind of the same and they're sitting along one, you know, alongside each other, I think for a person to make a decision, the person will choose the one that gives them the most options for change. So giving them options of out, giving them options to get refunds, you know, less fees to make changes, all of those kinds of things, and making it easy for our agents to be able to offer them. I think that's where the future is going. I mean, we're really gearing up for travel to come back. And, you know, I'm just proud of the company and way it's, you know, it's been dealing with it. We've had to downsize. You know, I've got a marketing hat that I can wear. So while I'm not selling into Vietnam at the moment, I'm certainly using all my skills in marketing and building social media content and, you know, working with our travel agents. So, you know, people know that we're still here, that we're still strong, we're still relevant, and just making sure that our presence is still well known out there in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the challenge. And I feel your pain also doing sales repping for DMCs in Southeast Asia right now. So I want to talk more about your podcast, What About Vietnam? Because it's fantastic, fantastic listen. And it covers all things travel in Vietnam. And it launched in May 2020. So how hard has it been for you to find topics to cover whilst international travel hasn't been happening?
Well, it's really funny. It's the 11th of May, and I think my first episode launched on the 11th of May, 2020. So it's a bit of a birthday. How about that?
Oh, happy anniversary.
Thank you. Everybody asks me that question. They go, how are you doing a podcast about Vietnam when no one could go there? It's not hard to find topics because there's just so much in Vietnam to cover. And if you think of it like, if you experience, if you go to a destination, your experience of that place will probably be very different to mine. And I think the wonderful thing about Vietnam and me being the opportunity to talk to travelers, to talk to some expats, to talk to locals, I'm getting kind of the real deal of experiences that, you know, you mightn't get to read in a Lonely Planet guide or a TripAdvisor. And you're getting their spin on it, their take on it, what they saw of it. So, you know, whilst we can't go there, I'm really hoping I'm creating a library of experiences that people can go, hey, you know, I really like to do some trekking or some caving or that. Why don't we go and listen to that episode, you know, that Kerry did with the guy in Phong Nha Caves? You know, he sounded a bit of a real deal kind of guy. And he talked about, you know, we talked about with kids loving it. And, you know, I think that's sort of been the aim of the podcast, is to really kind of build up as a resource. And I could be doing this, you know, right all the way to the old people's home, I think.
Well, it's great work that you're doing, Kerry. I've listened to some of the episodes and they're really, really interesting. And your enthusiasm just shines through, which is great. Now, you obviously visited Vietnam several times. You've seen a lot of the country. You know a lot of the places where Australian travelers would like to go. But what about yourself? Where is there that you maybe haven't seen in Vietnam yet or would be sort of high on your list to return to in future?
As we talked about, I got stuck in March 2020, so I haven't been back for over a year. And in that trip, I was due to go to the Phong Nha Caves. And, you know, as I mentioned, that's an experience in itself. And because since then I've spoken to some people about the caves and, you know, I've interviewed Ben Mitchell on my podcast who runs a homestay. So I want to go to Phong Nha. I want to go because I got inspired from Ben that I really needed to go, and I wish I'd gone back in March. So first on my list is Phong Nha Caves. I don't know whether I'm going to do that four-day trek one. There's plenty of other caves I can do. The other place I want to go to is Com Dao Islands. Now, it's referred to as the Maldives of Vietnam. So try and picture that, if you will, that beautiful bespoke kind of accommodation right on the beach. It's only a 45-minute flight from Ho Chi Minh City. So I'm thinking that just a few days of R&R there would be just fantastic. And then, you know, I might debate on a couple of other places. But, you know, the country, you know, we're sitting here in Australia, but the country in Vietnam is still evolving. They're still opening up. There's so much construction going on and, you know, resorts being built, and people are using the time to develop more bespoke experiences. I mean, I might even do the 10K run, the trial marathon, to go and experience some of the mountains. Because, you know, I was talking to David Lloyd, I know I did that podcast, and, you know, I thought, gosh, I might have a crack at that. That could be really something fantastic, to experience the mountains of Sapa. And, you know, he reckons it's just one long picnic. Ha, 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 one long picnic at you know, 100-kilometre run is really what the whole end-to-end is. But, you know, maybe I might just chalk down 10. So there's lots of experiences there for me still to do. And, yeah, they're kind of top of my list. But
long I'll come list. Join you for that 10K, Kerry.
Fantastic. I'll be in touch, you know, when I'm there. I might take you up on that.
And before we finish, it's been fantastic talking to you. For our listeners who'd like to check out your podcast, where can they find it?
One of the fantastic, most timely things about this interview is that I'm about to launch a new website. It's, of course, whataboutvietnam.com. And on that, I'm hoping to offer it as a bit of a resource, in the sense that you can go and listen to the podcast itself, but you can also download the transcript. You can also print it off, and you can read my blog, sign up for a subscription, so I can kind of keep you up to date on a regular basis of all new and wonderful things in Vietnam. So definitely reach out to me at whataboutvietnam.com. As I'm hoping that's going to be the place you're going to find all good things that are Vietnam.
Fantastic. We'll do that. Well, thanks so much, Kerry, for coming on the show. I think Gary and I have really enjoyed it. And hearing about Vietnam, but from kind of an Australian perspective, it's been really interesting too.
Thanks very much for having me. It's been an absolute delight.
So that brings us to the end of this week's interview. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and don't forget to send us your thoughts and comments on what we discussed with Kerry or what we missed out. You can drop us an email at hello@theseasiatravelshow.com or message us on our LinkedIn page at the Southeast Asia Travel Show or Twitter at SEA Travel Show.
Yep. Meanwhile, you can catch up with the Southeast Asia Travel Show's full back catalogue, www.theseasiatravelshow.com. Or on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Podchaser, Castbox, Podcast Addict, and Stitcher. Just search for the Southeast Asia Travel Show on each app. And if you do listen to us on Apple Podcasts, please remember to rate and review us, as that helps other people to find the show.
So that's a wrap for this week. We're both off to order some Vietnamese takeaway for lunch. And we look forward to talking Southeast Asian travel and tourism again with you very soon.